Hello and welcome to the Spinal Nerve Podcast. My name is Dr. Brian Hovez. Thank you guys for joining us and thank you for listening and sharing and just being a part of this community. I really, really do appreciate everybody helping us to continue growing the podcast. It has been a number of years and we are still getting new listeners that are finding us likely by way of your sharing the podcast with them. So I really appreciate it. Please reach out to me with any questions, comments, ideas on ways that I can improve, how we can make this show more interesting for you. And as always, you know, we do not have sponsors on this. And so really the one thing that I would like to ask if you found value in any of the podcasts that we've done is that you share and subscribe. It helps us to grow. It helps the podcast to continue to reach more people. This week, I have a great conversation coming to you. I got the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Mike Ochoa. He is a doctor of physical therapy who is board certified specialist in geriatrics. And he has an amazing YouTube channel where he teaches folks how to move their bodies and how to be able to, improve on injuries through exercise and movement. But the thing that we wanted to talk about was exercise in an aging population. You know, I have obviously a very close pull in my heart and my patients to be able to figure out how to optimize the movement and the regular routines of our patients, because as a pain medicine physician, we obviously treat a lot of patients that are in that retirement and older age. And we want to make sure that as we're doing all of the modalities and treatments that we have in pain medicine, we also want to continue to focus on their ability to exercise and their ability to optimize their muscular control and their strength. So I reached out to Dr. Mike and asked him, can we sit down and talk about this and figure out how we can work together to make sure that we're optimizing our overall routine for our patients? So I think you guys are going to like this one. Stay tuned for Dr. Mike. Reach out to me with any questions or comments. Hello and welcome to the Spinal Nerve Podcast. My name is Dr. Brian Hovis, and today I have an amazing guest joining me today, Dr. Mike Ochoa. Thank you for joining me, sir.
How you doing, Brian? Thank you for having me.
And so, Dr. Ochoa is a doctor of physical therapy who has done an amazing job of educating people about different ways of moving your body and how to improve your overall fitness. He's got a fantastic YouTube channel, Move with Dr. Mike, which we will reference in the notes below. But today I really wanted to kind of dive in deep to the idea of exercise in an aging population. But Dr. Mike, before we get there, can you just share a little bit of background about you and kind of who you are and where you're coming from?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Brian. And once again, thanks for having me again. My name's Mike. I go by Dr. Mike on the YouTube channel, but I am a doctor of physical therapy. Went to Fresno State University and got my doctorate of physical therapy there. Come from primarily an exercise and fitness background. I've been around fitness all my life and pretty much have been a licensed physical therapist now since 2015. So worked as, a personal trainer in the past, done a ton of fitness classes. And right now I'm working as a Kaiser physical therapist. That's my kind of full-time job, but I have created some content creation in the YouTube world space because I had more information that I really wanted to share with people. Geriatrics and the older population is definitely a passion of mine. And I felt like why hold this information in if I can share this with a larger audience? And that's what led to the page there. And so, I have a geriatric clinical specialist, through the physical therapists, California, the board. I'm also taking many classes with the Academy of Geriatrics. So I really wanted to feel comfortable and confident with knowing how to dose and prescribe exercise for this population. And I felt like, this is a population that often gets underdosed and not a lot of people pay really close attention to how these patients can benefit. And they're just like all of us, right? We're all getting older and aging. And I feel like we all need to have eyes on us and need to be taking care of our bodies so we can continue to do the things that we love, the things that we enjoy.
No, that's amazing. I think from my perspective, obviously with the patients that we treat, we see so many patients that, are of that retirement age that are, just wanting to continue playing golf, playing pickleball, chasing after their grandkids, making it to Little League games, those types of things. And obviously by the time they come and see me,
I think, you know, yes, there are obviously tools and ways that we're going to try to work with them, but so much is lost in the ability of trying to keep them from getting to see a doctor like myself, right? And being able to get to them earlier, to educate them well on the things that they can do or kind of along that phase. And then, you know, obviously if something happens, you know, whether it's, you know, time catching up and you needing a knee replacement or, you know, needing, having something going on with your spine, then how to get back to that level, right? I mean, I think there's so much nuance in kind of treating this population that I think it'd be really great to kind of, you know, kind of walk through a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, I told you earlier, one of my favorite classes in undergrad at UC Davis was this course on exercise and aging. And Dr. James Shafrath, who I don't think is teaching anymore, unfortunately, it'd be great if he was, one of the most phenomenal docs that I've ever had the pleasure of learning from and listening to. He was a PhD in exercise physiology, and just hit the way his passion for being able to talk about the benefits of exercise and just how it impacts, you know, overall quality of life, every single aspect from, you know, the cardiovascular system, the respiratory system, and obviously the musculoskeletal system. But, you know, what are some of the maybe common misconceptions about exercise and in this aging population, right? In our retirees, in our patients that are, you know, starting to get towards, you know, what people would consider the twilight of their life.
Yeah. So just to give some folks a little more background, I did come from an outpatient orthopedic setting, meaning that, you know, I was working with a lot of higher level athletes, and then you deal with, especially on a clinic setting, you deal with more advanced, you know, folks who are fitter, they're able to stay very active, and then transition into the home health field, where I primarily will see anywhere between people that are age 45 and above. And some of the misconception that people have is, I noticed that a lot of people were just so afraid of, for one, weightlifting, you know, adding in modalities like kettlebells and barbells and dumbbells in providing the right stimulus for the patient. And so as a result, a lot of our patients, or at least the folks that I would see, came and have had physical therapy and have seen the doc and have seen all of these personal trainers, but they were never introduced to these type of modalities. So they kind of stuck with maybe just resistance bands or just body weight stuff. So I would say like just the myth of like being afraid to lift weights, right? And I'm not saying that is the only way to get the job done, but I'm saying that this is a great modality that we can use as practitioners to help improve, you know, longevity with our bodies. And also just in general, like, we feel that as we get older, like the intensity, it should be easy. It shouldn't hurt. It should be comfortable, right? And that's simply false. Like, if you're going to make adaptations, if you're going to improve, like, that's going to be challenging. And sometimes that means you're going to be sore. Sometimes that means you're going to be challenged in the workout, right? It's not, sometimes that may mean you're compromising a little on form, and you might deal with some of that pain. Now, obviously, you have to balance that out on whether that's an actual limitation for you, and, you know, whether you're, you know, hurting yourself or doing yourself more good. But at the end of the day, you want to do whatever you can to keep moving.
Yeah, no, I think it's so well said, right? I mean, it's very common for, you know, particularly when we're talking to older, and I think for the sake of ease, we'll probably consider older, like, let's say retirement age, right? Like, you know, 60 plus or so. You know, I think it's really easy for people to fall into the, well, get your walking in, and that's your exercise. Or, you know, even I'll fall victim to this sometimes. And obviously my patients are probably a little bit different than the vast majority of the patients that we're talking about, you know, but we'll talk patients through, you know, what a home exercise program looks like, and not just, you know, focusing on whatever the core strength and the flexibility, but then kind of talking them through into, you know, aquatic exercise and, yoga type tools or Pilates type things. Which I believe are very, very important, obviously, for back health. But then when you get to that kind of bigger component, or maybe even once the patients are progressed where their cores are stable, and, you know, maybe they're not dealing with, you know, inherent back pain at the time, you know, getting them to do some of the weight training, right? I mean, I think that's, it is such an understated or underutilized tool for a lot of our older population, our retirement age population. I don't hear a lot about it. I see plenty of retirees, and I don't hear a lot of them talking about weight training, right? But it is something that, or resistance training in general, as a way of being able to, you know, maintain muscle mass, because we all lose it if we don't use it, and also to just improve their overall, you know, fitness and quality of life.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people would argue, well, I don't want to get hurt, or, you know, what's really the benefit? And really, we're dealing with a health standpoint here. You know, conditions like sarcopenia, where patients over time lose, their muscle is wasting, right? They're not getting that challenge through the skeletal system. Conditions, you know, the silent disease of osteopenia and osteoporosis, which many people don't really know that they have it until they're actually tested, or especially with my folks, that they encounter a fall. And then what do you know, they are diagnosed now with osteoporosis. These are conditions, though, that really could be prevented when you are able to challenge your body and add in some modalities like resistance training. And when I say weight training, I use the resistance training interchangeably. You'll notice weightlifting, resistance training, any type of mechanical loading is what we're after, right? And so obviously, I'm not saying that the end all be all is just weight training. I know the benefits of mobility and flexibility, and but really, when it comes to strength training, it allows us to develop that foundation and stability. And the understanding is that you're continuing to work on your mobility, and that may include Pilates and yoga classes or static stretching or dynamic stretching, right? But at the end of the day, one, it's functional, and two, you're really trying to save yourself those later years of having really good quality of life. Right. It's like most of our folks are retiring and they're looking forward to maybe starting up a new hobby or traveling, but sometimes they're dealing with conditions that are limiting them from enjoying that retirement. Right. And so they end up having to limit these activities or pull back. And so these are areas where I feel like this is a time where you really could be also, you know, pushing your body and really getting the most out of those later decades of your life.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's even more interesting when you actually look at some of the, you know, clinical studies that have been done and looking at, you know, resistance training and its effects on flexibility or its effects on aerobic fitness. I mean, it coincides so well with, you know, improving those outcomes, which people don't normally associate as a part of the things that you're expecting from a resistance training routine, right? And so, I mean, you know, when we obviously we want aerobic fitness, we want flexibility for this population as well. But resistance training kind of falls right in line and actually even individually helps with both of those as well, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about, you know, I think another common thing that I know I've heard, you know, through my medical training and, you know, speaking with other, healthcare providers, that are more on the front lines of seeing these patients, you know, maybe as a primary care physician or the like, what do you think about, or what would you say to them when they're asking how an older patient is going to respond to resistance training? Right? I mean, I think there might be some fallacy that resistance training in an older population just doesn't provide the same benefits that it would for you or for myself as we would go do some resistance training.
Yeah, I think we all have to understand that we have a starting point, right? So everyone's starting point is going to look a little bit different based on what their baseline function of fitness looks like. Some people are more active or were more active at a younger age, and some people, they've never exercised in their life, right? So it's understanding, especially when they're working with the practitioner, what their baseline is and meeting them where they're at. And I would say the best thing is to keep it simple. And really we're looking for what modifications do we have to make? How can we keep the program simple enough so that it can be effective and allowing them to be consistent? Because if it's too hard or too easy, quite honestly, you and I are not going to follow any sort of fitness or exercise program that one is not giving us results. And when I say results, people start to feel stronger. They have more energy. They're able to get up off the ground. They're able to walk for longer periods with their friends and families. These are effects that they feel after as a result from the exercise, but it takes the buy-in, right? It takes it takes us practitioners to train these individuals, but also understand what their why and their desire is for life, right? If we don't know their personal goals or what really motivates them or drives them, it's going to be hard to encourage anybody to want to exercise. So I often believe there's a huge psychological component to this. And I always want to know, what is your why? Why are you doing this? Why are you here to see me? Why do you want to get better? What plans in the future do you have? And how can I help you achieve that? I don't want to give the same cookie cutter home exercise program or for everyone, right? Everyone has a different need. And everyone has different injuries that they're kind of recovering from. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, what is their why and their desire?
What if we're kind of thinking a little bit more on, like, let's say, you know, not on an individual basis, but we're thinking kind of population wise, right? You know, let's say we're talking to, you know, that, you know, primary care physician, or maybe like somebody working in community health that's, you know, trying to do some outreach, trying to educate people, but, you know, doesn't have maybe the time or even maybe even the training to be able to do a specific assessment, understand what that patient's going through, understand, you know, the exact modifications that this patient's going to need, and have the time to kind of talk them through, you know, what those motivations are. What are some things that we can kind of maybe, you know, use on a more widespread scale as saying, okay, these are we'll start with modifications maybe that we have to think about as we're getting going, you know, for a, you know, retiring patient that is, you know, generally been in okay health. They haven't exercised in 20 years, but, you know, they're no longer having to work their desk job, and they're hitting retirement, and boy, that golf course over there looks good. But, you know, if I go out there, I'm really afraid that I'm going to hurt myself. Like, how do we start kind of addressing that kind of general population?
Yeah, well, in general, for someone, maybe if they're dealing with an injury or concern, my first option would, you know, have them be seen by whether that's a physical therapist, a chiropractor, someone that is trained and skilled on watching movement. That would probably be the safest bet on ensuring that they could get a full, you know, functional assessment, so someone can put some eyes on them and figure out, okay, are they at a higher risk for injury? But for the normal individual who maybe doesn't have pain or doesn't have any previous injuries, you know, you're just starting with the basics. You know, we definitely want to focus on building an aerobic base, and that's where a great walking program could be beneficial for people. And then learning how to add in some functional movements to help build up stability in the upper and the lower body. You know, I'm a huge fan of, you know, squatting, and for everyone that might look a little bit different, but, you know, they have, you know, squatting with the barbell, maybe even squatting with the kettlebell. And then, you know, working on some type of hinge pattern, deadlifting pattern, which is going to help teach many individuals how to pick up objects off the ground. And then some sort of press, right? Whether that's vertical or horizontal pressing, to help really attack some of the upper body and the shoulder strength. But am I answering your question?
Yeah, no, I think that's okay. I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Just kind of a general approach to, you know, give people some guidance, right? They, you know, they maybe, like I said, maybe not an injury focused individual, but just generally they know that, you know, I haven't really done anything for 20 years. I've sat at a desk and just kind of gotten through life, and, you know, now I have all this free time and I want to do things. I'm just afraid of it, right? Or maybe reluctant or apprehensive to start walking down that path, right? And so, you know, trying to, you know, figure out how we can communicate better with them to be able to get them through that reluctance or apprehension.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, I talk about modalities like dumbbells and barbells, because that's kind of what was trained for. And I spent many years, you know, using those type of modalities and teaching other people how to use them. But maybe that means for some individuals, they're starting off and they attend a gym and using, you know, the body weight, using their own body weight, but also using the machines at the gym. They're, you know, I'm not the greatest fan of those machines, but right, you know, for someone starting off, it's a great start. It's some resistance training versus doing nothing at all, right? So at least starting on, hey, you know what, two times out of the week, I'm going to commit to starting to add some sort of resistance training, some weights into the program. And a lot of these days, these machines, they can be confusing, but they have, you know, a little instruction on there and it'll show you, you know, how to get started. But that'll kind of get you moving in the right direction. And then obviously the more you become interested and the more you realize how beneficial it could be, then that can take you on a full journey of wanting to learn new skills. And that's what resistance training is. You're learning new skills on, you know, how to use a kettlebell and how to use a dumbbell and how to hold a barbell, right? These are all skills that I try to teach on my channel. But anyone can learn. You know, I have, I lecture once a year for one of the allied health education companies, and it's about aging and how to dose exercise for these older folks. And I have one of my friends who is pretty much a power lifter in his 80s. And we have a video of him, you know, lifting weights, and he started when he was in his 50s. And he was breaking records for USA. And it's like, it shows you that it's never too late. Everyone has a starting point, right? So I would just say starting now and just starting to incorporate some of those principles will start to get you in that journey so that you can really start to see the benefits, right? And feel the effects of what it can actually do for your body.
No, I love that story. I think I've, you know, have a number of people that I've met over time that have, you know, started a journey late, you know, whether that's, you know, weightlifting, whether that's, you know, deciding to get into triathlons, or, you know, whether it's just, you know, picking up pickleball and, you know, they've never been an athlete, never done anything like that before. And all of a sudden, you know, they're just, you know, really, you know, obsessed is maybe the right word to be able to, you know, keep on learning this new skill and realizing just how amazing the human body is at being able to learn these different functional abilities.
Yeah, I have, you know, I've been CrossFitting since 2012. So I do coach two times a week at a local gym downtown and here in Sacramento. And I get folks in their 50s and 60s, and they are kicking people's butt, like especially the younger guns. And yeah, maybe some movements they're not able to do, you know, overhead squat is a very difficult exercise, and we find a way to kind of modify it, but they're in there every day, little experience, working hard. They have a community around them to really push each other. And that's what motivates them. They like competing with other individuals who are, you know, half their age, and they're really putting in the work. So it encourages me. I love seeing people have that desire, and it's amazing. And I hope that I continue to have that desire when I'm that age. And that's what I preach, and that's what I love. And it really lights a fire in me when I see people like that, because it's like, that is amazing. That's our why. That's what we want to be as we get older.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's also great too, because like, obviously not every patient is going to, you know, want to compete at CrossFit or want to, you know, be an Olympic level bodybuilder or something along those lines. But I think just knowing that that's possible, and then knowing that even if it's not to that level, the ability to learn these movements or to just continue on a functional training regimen, you know, and whether with resistance or aerobic or whatever it might be, you know, will also just set them up for regular overall quality of life improvements, right? And you know, we know that there's so much great correlation between, you know, fitness level and, you know, fall prevention, and, you know, being able to, you know, or, you know, God forbid something does happen, being able to recover from something, you know, a fall or an injury or an accident or something along those lines. And so that I think just knowing that the outliers that do exist, that can be such a motivating factor for somebody who is, you know, 65 and, you know, spent the last 20 years sitting at a desk to be like, you know what, I might not want to, you know, lift 200 pounds over my head, but if somebody can start at my age and achieve that, I know that I can start and, you know, be able to, you know, chase after my grandkids for the foreseeable future or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, going back to my original point, simple, keep it simple, right? Hey, maybe that's today. You've just seen someone do a farmer's carry. We know the benefits of what carrying weight in our hands, the the research behind grip strength and leg strength and fitness, right? So maybe that's today. It's like, hey, I just learned the farmer carry. So for the next 4 weeks, once a week, I'm going to try carrying some kettlebells, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes and see how my grip feels, and or, you know, see how my body feels and see how I'm carrying the weight, right? Like keeping it simple and starting that journey is the biggest key. So, you know, it doesn't have to be this huge program and 45, 60 minutes in the gym. Like maybe for some people that's 10 minutes, maybe for others that's 20. But when you start to incorporate those items, you'll start to figure out which ones you actually enjoy and which ones are challenging. And then you can start to kind of get creative with what you do each week.
You know, what you just said, the simplicity of it, right? And I think you kind of, I don't want to gloss over, you know, you said maybe 10, maybe 20 minutes, right? I mean, I think people generally, when we're talking about fitness and whatever that may be, whether that's somebody who's a teenager, you know, starting to play, or whether that's somebody who's a retirement age or older that is, you know, thinking about getting it first time, I think a lot of people think that it requires this huge buy-in of time and energy. But I, you know, when I'm talking to patients about it, it's exactly what you just said, right? Well, let's 5, 10, 15 minutes, you know, you start, right? It's a place to start, and then you build on it. And that's, you know, I think that, you know, decreasing that, the threshold to be able to kind of get into that journey, I think helps people to be able to at least start.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I preach, and I made a video about this, is I teach my patients exercise snacking. We all know what snacking is, right? But exercise snacking is basically the idea of, you know, sprinkling in 5-10 minutes sporadic throughout the day. And it doesn't have to be these long sessions, right? You'll be surprised with how much you can do in a short amount of time, and then spread out throughout the day. It's a very easy entry point for many people to say, all right, let's do this. You know, let's do this for 5 minutes. Okay. And okay. Oh, wow. I feel really good. And then, all right, in lunchtime, I want you to do this for another 5 minutes, right? Like, so exercise snacking is a great concept to kind of help people grasp the idea of small bouts can be just as effective throughout the day versus this, you know, many people think this long 45 to 60 minute hour session, right? Or maybe you enjoy that. Maybe people have the time and they can do that. Most of us, especially me with two kids, I exercise snack all the time because I realize I need to be fit. I need to carry these kids around. I need to be able to show them that I'm a role model for them. And I don't have an hour or 2 hours like I used to. Sometimes I have 10 minutes, sometimes I have 20 minutes, but you better believe that I'm doing it every day because I know the benefits of what it's going to do down for the long run.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that one of the things that, you know, patients, but I think especially healthcare providers who are seeing these patients and trying to talk about it, you know, when we're talking about something like exercise snack, actually, I love the idea of using that phrase. But there is really good data that supports, you know, that you can build especially upper body strength with like one set of activity, right? I mean, it doesn't, you know, mm-hmm. We always think that it takes a lot. And, you know, I mean, obviously if you want to become Arnold Schwarzenegger, it does. But, you know, for the vast majority of people, particularly somebody who is relatively detrained, one set of physical activity, resistance training in the upper limbs can build strength. I think the data,
I agree. Says,
two sets for the lower limbs. I think the lower limbs, just because they're, you know, even in somebody who's detrained, we're, you know, still generally ambulating and moving up and down. But you know, it doesn't take a lot to start the process of, you know, building muscle, building mitochondrial strength, you know, getting the benefits of resistance training. And so I think, you know, when we talk about exercise snacking, which, like I said, I absolutely love that. I'm going to steal that from you. I think it's something that a lot of people on the front lines can take and use and know that it's backed by science, right? Like that's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love how Andy Galpin on one of his podcasts, he talks about hypertrophy being dummy proof. Like literally you could do whatever you want and you can see results. Like you can find a way to build muscle with bands. You can find a way to build muscle with the amount of reps you're doing or how much time domain you're working in, right? Like, so it's just about being creative and finding something that you enjoy and that's challenging you, right? It has to challenge you, right? If if you're doing one set and it's not challenging you, then that's a different discussion. But if you're challenging your body, working, you know, between the 70 to 80%, and you'll feel it, you know, you'll definitely feel it. It'll challenge you. So, yeah, exercise snacking is the way to go for the rest of my life, for sure.
Yeah. Well, as somebody slightly ahead of you with the kids, I can tell you, the exercise snacking becomes even more important, as they get older. So, you gotta keep it moving. What do you believe are the keys, to maintaining an active and healthy lifestyle as we age? So like, you know, obviously we've kind of gone through a lot of things, but like, let's, you know, kind of get even more kind of big picture, for let's assume that we have some people that are actually, you know, watching this and they want to make a change in their life, but what are some of the big picture things that we have to think about when we're saying, okay, what are the keys to just maintaining this active and healthy lifestyle, right? Like, I'm 40, you know, 20 years from now, as time keeps going on, I'm going to be hopefully approaching retirement, and I'm going to be wanting to make sure that I can keep doing the things that I know that I want to do now. Right. And I don't know what 60-year-old Brian's going to think about or look like, or have been doing, but what do you think are ways that we can kind of leave people with, or give people an idea of, like, say, focus on these ideas, and it should help you as we kind of keep moving things forward.
Good question. You know, we know the guidelines say, you know, we've all heard the whole, you know, 10,000 steps a day, right? I mean, how many people are actually able to do that? That's a lot if you've actually done that. But as far as a walking program, which is going to basically cover your aerobic base and some stamina, I tell people to shoot anywhere between 6 to 10,000 steps. Everyone's going to start differently, right? We all should be resistance training at least 2 times a week. It's a good start for many people. If you really enjoy it, you can obviously do more than that. Flexibility and mobility, even though it's not talked a lot about, I feel like can be done a little every day. And that's a great exercise snack that you can incorporate, just because as we get older, whether you're lifting weights or not, our joints tend to get stiff. Right. And if you don't know, stiffness usually develops over time, muscle tightens up. And when you realize, like, why does my shoulder start to hurt when I'm doing things overhead? Or why are my hips starting to hurt? Well, it's essentially because you're losing the flexibility in your body overall. In general, that tends to be what happens if you're not taking it through, you know, full range of motion and really trying to make an effort to stretch, right? So when it comes to mobility, I'm a firm believer, it doesn't have to be a long session, but doing something related to stretching every day, strength training at least 2 to 3 times a week. Aerobic training, you know, that can also be done almost every day, but I would say in general, 3 to 5 times a week, because you'll be surprised what a good walking program. And I say walking because that's a very easy exercise for many people to start, because that's cost effective. And there's so many ways that you can make walking challenging, but starting off with the walking is a great base to start to build that aerobic capacity and endurance. And then starting to sprinkle in some strength training and ensuring that, hey, maybe for some individuals, they have a painful shoulder, so they're spending more time on flexibility of the shoulder or the hips. So yeah, and when you're working on strength training exercises, you are going to hit some components of neuromuscular control and training. You're going to hit some balance and coordination, right? You're doing exercises that are challenging those other systems of the body. But I would say, like, those three are kind of your entryway of, like, really starting to make the effort of taking care of your body. You know, build good stamina and aerobic by walking, starting to incorporate some strength training at least 2 times a week or 3 times a week, and then working on your flexibility. And as we get older, I'm going to say every day, because it's important. If we neglect that, we are all going to feel it at some point in our lives.
Yeah. A couple of times while you've been talking both throughout this conversation, I've gotten this picture of the people sitting on the floor. And because I remember studying, I wish I can exactly remember it off the top of my head, but I don't. But there was a study once that I remember reading that talked about cultures that just generally sit on the floor and how that improves function as people age. And, you know, as you've talked about, you know, strength and mobility and flexibility, you know, I just keep getting this picture of, you know, this nice 85-year-old woman who sits cross-legged on the floor to be able to eat or to be able to converse with her family. And, you know, every day she has to get down, she has to get up, right? It's almost these micro bits of, you know, exercise snacking that are built in to just normal life. But the fact that we have data on functional improvements from different cultures, just purely based off of culturally, it's normal that people, you know, sit on the floor for whether it be for eating or for, enjoying family. Like, I think that's an amazing way of being able to look at just how important it is to be able to do or continue to maintain that functional ability and those, that strength and mobility through your life.
Yeah, and that's amazing because obviously that's cultural, right? They've developed a healthy standpoint, and some of the things everything that they do is like literally from the ground, right? So the amount of ankle mobility and hip mobility that they are developing, just spending more time in those positions. Yeah. That's what stretching is. It's spending more time in positions that are not really comfortable for us. Right. And it really is. And so it's like, you know, spending more time until eventually we have less resistance and we're able to like spend more time there and develop the length in the muscle belly and have more control in those new ranges of motion. But yeah, I'm kind of going off on another note, but I agree. It's amazing to see across the country what other people's cultures are and how that has related to their overall health and longevity.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right. I want to take a hard pivot. I don't have a great transition for it. So sorry, everybody. You've done a great job in a relatively short amount of time of being able to educate people. And which I think is really cool. And so, you know, I'm lucky in that you're here in the same region that I am. And so, you know, but at the same time, you're able to, you know, teach people and share with them all of this knowledge and for something that you kind of just started out of the blue, kind of walk me through a little bit of the journey of deciding, okay, I want to do this. And then like, how do you actually, what has been your, I guess, experience or the feedback that you've received in, you know, creating these educational videos that, you know, now at this point with, you know, a growing channel that, you know, has, like I said, in a very short amount of time made a pretty significant impact in the world, I guess, if you want to think about it since YouTube is gigantic, how has that been?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I'm coming up. Well, I started in October of 2022 and, it was literally 2 weeks after my son was born. And my wife says, well, I think you should, I had told her like, hey, like I have some ideas and I want to start sharing them. And here I thought this is going to be super easy, just talking to a camera. And she says, okay, I think you should wait until after, you know, baby comes and let us settle in and spend some time. So he was born September 29th. And 2 weeks later, I'm like, all right, I'm doing this. And I start channel and I just, you know, I start recording and I start thinking about how many times I've spent time with a patient who have said, no one has ever said things that way, or no one has ever told me that way. And it kept coming up over and over. And I came to a point where I'm like, why am I not sharing my knowledge or information? What type of a print do I want to leave on this earth? Why am I not sharing this with everyone? You know, I have developed a lot of knowledge over the years as a therapist and doing all these certifications and trainings, but what I am learning is so applicable for anybody, right? And how can I put this in simple terms so that the layman person can take these principles and these concepts and run with them and take care of their own health, right? And so I started creating videos and, it was very uncomfortable being on camera, thinking like, oh, this is going to be super easy. I have all these ideas. And but it was, it put me in a very uncomfortable position and challenged me in ways that I never would think. Learning how to edit my videos. Right now I'm still a solo entrepreneur, and I'm doing everything on my own, creating thumbnails and learning, spend 3 or 4 months just learning how to edit in Premiere Pro and coming up with concepts and thumbnails and titles, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, how can I make a video that attracts someone so that they can understand the concept that I'm trying to get across, the idea that I'm trying to teach, right? And all of these other components of making a video viewable for someone are important, right? It keeps people engaged. It keeps them wanting to continue to watch. So it's been a very, very eye-opening experience. And, I'm coming up on almost 12,000 subscribers. I have met with a few other creators who have said, they tell me, wow, like the growth is fast, and that's great. Normally it takes people 5 to 8 years. And for me, I don't know what to expect. I'm just like, okay, thank you. Like, I don't know what big growth is or how fast it's supposed to happen. At the end of the day, as long as I can provide value to the audience, to the people out there listening, that's what I care about. As long as they are answering questions that I maybe ask in videos, as long as they're sparking interest, as long as maybe someone comes across a video and says, I never thought about it that way, right? As long as they learn something, I've already won, right? So I just have so much information that I want to share, so many ideas that I feel like people can learn from. And I want to continue to share that until I run out of ideas. So I really enjoy it. Maybe down the road, as hopefully as it grows, I'll be able to outsource, some of the editing and everything. But it really has taught me, in regards to just personal growth, do things uncomfortable, not just fitness wise, but personal life wise, right? This makes me really uncomfortable. And obviously with practice, you get better. You get become more efficient. You see what you like, you see what you don't like. And it's all experience, man. We're all in this together. So
yeah, no, it's amazing. I give you so much credit. I mean, the reason we started as a podcast is because I don't want to learn any of that stuff. Our podcast was kind of built actually initially internally as our practice was growing. We wanted to make sure that we were helping our entire team to stay up on the things that we were, reviewing, learning new journal articles and such. And that was how that started. But I've still never learned to do any of the things that you've talked about and that you've been doing, which I think is amazing, because you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, as healthcare providers, we all learn so much. We get so much training. You get so much experience working with patients. You've got so much to share and ways to be able to help people. And then, we have these amazing outlets where if you learn them well and actually do the things that, a place like YouTube or, obviously there are people that do content on different platforms, but if you learn how to do them in a way that will actually get people to view them, more people are going to hear that information and be able to learn from it, which I think is pretty amazing. Have you been able to connect with other like physical therapists or medical or healthcare providers that do similar things with kind of going through it?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely can count on one hand who has actually been willing to network and connect with me. It definitely feels like the content creation world is you're solo, right? And if some of the larger creators, they're doing their own thing and we're all busy. So I've reached out to a few of them and I've met, on Zoom with a chiropractor, Active Chiro, who's amazing enough to meet with me and share with me his experience and his knowledge, which I'm so grateful for, and makes me realize that, wherever this channel goes, if people have questions for me, like, I want to share that. I have nothing to hide. Right, we're all in this journey, and if someone's interested in getting in this type of line of work and getting into content creation, like if I can help you in any way, like I'm so happy to do that. So Unfortunately, I wish I could have networked more with people. And once again, I thank you, Brian, for even initiating this as a podcast. Like, this is my first time being on a podcast, and I'm happy to be here to share some of this. But you're really solo, you know, unless even if you make the effort, like, people are busy and, you know, it happens, you know, no hard feelings, but I want to give back to whoever wants to learn, because I know what it feels like. And, it's not easy. It takes work. It takes a lot of work and learning. And if you're willing to be patient and you're willing to, you know, understand that you don't know everything, like, that's how we learn, right? That's how we improve ourselves. So yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I absolutely love, you know, your channel. I love all of the physical therapists that have kind of done the work of being able to get it. I know, particularly when we think about like the early days of the pandemic, you know, when we were going through things and we couldn't actually get patients to physical therapy, right? Like there was no physical therapy for people to show up to. You know, it was a resource that we had to be able to offer, because we knew that, you know, obviously, you know, being an interventional physiatrist, like, we know how important that is as a part of helping our patients and, you know, treating the population that we're treating. But, you know, there's a lot of times that, you know, whether it's, you know, the pandemic, whether it's, you know, costs, whether it's, you know, just where they live or something, there's a lot of people that don't have access to being able to necessarily get to somebody in person, either as much as they need to, or sometimes at all. And so having, you know, very intelligent, well-spoken people being able to provide further information for the patients, to be able to help them, to be able to guide them through that recovery journey, whatever it may be, is amazing. And so you know, I absolutely love the fact that, you know, you and so many other amazing practitioners are providing this benefit for all of us to be able to share and to be able to use to help our patients do better. I think it's amazing. And I appreciate it. And I'm going to speak for my entire practice and hopefully for all physicians across the world when I say to you and to all of the other amazing healthcare providers that do it, like, we appreciate it, because, you know, the more information we're able to give our patients, the better outcomes we're all going to get, right? The better that our patients are going to do, and, you know, the better that, you know, our society is going to do because of it. So it's such a phenomenal tool that.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. No, you know, some people would create channels and they do things on maybe their hobbies or things that they enjoy. Like, this is what I love to do. I love movement. You know, I love helping people. I love seeing people improve their quality. Like, that's life. Like, we're all in this together. And if the skills that I've learned throughout the years can help you in one way or the other, hey man, I'm willing to share that. Whether you're here in person with me or you're watching one of my videos, I hope you can take, you know, some piece of that and apply it to, you know, your next session or your next, you know, exercise about whatever you'd like. So yeah, thanks for that, Brian. And it's good to hear that, you know, from a clinician and practitioner standpoint, you know, so we all kind of respect each other's and what we do and try to stay in our lanes, but also I think the collaborative component is super key on giving the patients what they need at the end of the day. And
well, I'm going to have it all listed in the show notes, but Mike, can you give people some places where they can reach out to you, where they can find you, where they can learn from you?
Yeah. You could check me out on Move with Dr. Mike is my handle on YouTube, MOVE. There is a Dr. Mike on YouTube. He's, you know, much more famous than me, millions of followers. That is not me. It's Move, MOVE, with Dr. Mike. I'm also on Instagram. I post, you know, short form video, and on TikTok as well. But my focus is on the long content with YouTube. So that's where you can find me there. Hopefully I hear from some of you guys. And if you do happen to watch or maybe spark curiosity, you know, feel free to go on my community page or leave a comment. I'm happy to take new ideas. If people want to learn about some specific injury or maybe specific strength training, feel free to comment on a video. And I read them all. I read them all and I respond to them all because they are all important to me. It's feedback and I want to give the audience what they want. So
that's awesome. Well, Mike, thanks again for joining me. Thanks for having this amazing conversation with me. I appreciate it. Everybody reach out to Dr. Mike and please let him know that you appreciated him stopping by and educating us. And we will see you guys next week.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Now for that legal disclaimer. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only. It is not meant to be medical advice. If anything discussed may pertain to you, please seek counsel with your healthcare provider. The views expressed are those of the individuals expressing them. They may not represent the views of Spine and Nerve Diagnostic Center.